Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I know it's Friday and there's a lot of things to look forward to on this wonderful upcoming weekend, but we're going to be talking today about a subject matter that so many of you have heard me discuss in different variations through some of the shows that I've done with that have included a number of different physicians. This doctor decided he wanted to let people know the facts about what he has experienced in his own practice and what he felt that you as a layperson need to be aware of so you can be in a more educated positioning. My guest today is Dr. Melvin H. Kirshner. His book is titled, All Medicines Are Poison, and this is about making your way through what he calls the medical minefield. Dr. Kirshner, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks
I for am, having Well, it's just a delight. Your book is so insightful, and I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You have had quite a career in the public health arena. Now, you
yes.
majored in engineering at Dartmouth and Brown Universities. Then you changed a major to bacteriology and public health, and you graduated with a BA and BS degree from the University of California in Los Angeles. Now, you began your career as a sanitary inspector for public health and also got involved in being a public health engineer. You've got so much background and training through the University of California, Berkeley, and also in the University of Southern California, and you've done a great deal of work at the Los Angeles County General Hospital. When you decided to go into medicine, I mean, you started out in engineering, and
yes.
boy, that's really a dovetail in today's medical world because of all the technology we've got, but what made you decide to go into the aspect of looking at bacteriology? I mean, that's a big shift, engineering to that.
Well, when I came out to California, my folks had moved out to California, and what was offered was the bacteriology degree. So I took that at UCLA. They didn't offer me the engineering. Excuse me. So I finished a bacteriology and public health because I was in the first class of public health at UCLA. So they were only offering a bachelor's degree. After working for years, I got a degree, a master's of public health at Berkeley, and it was there that the dean of the school wanted me to go to medical school, and he wrote letters for me. I only applied to the four schools in California and was immediately accepted at USC. But, you know, with the letter from the dean of the School of Public Health in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about a Dr. Webb right at the very beginning of your book, and I had to chuckle because in there you said one of his first statements, it was a Professor Webb, and you said, "I'm here to teach you how to poison people." Now, that's always a way to get somebody's attention when you're in a class of that. But it was an introduction to pharmacology, which I thought was fascinating. And you said you've never forgotten that particular lesson And that in all of your years of medicine, everything that he said in that class is just as valid today as it was then.
Absolutely. He had just gone to China for a couple of years where nobody else was allowed to go any. That was the Mao days.
Mm-hmm.
And studied Chinese medicine and had just come back to his university position. And the first thing he told us was all medicines are poison. And that was the theme of the class all year. You use a medicine if you must, if the benefit outweighs the burdens and the dangers. If there's too much of a risk, you don't use the medicine. And even a medicine that could be relatively safe, we all use aspirin,
mm-hmm.
is poisonous. It can
mm-hmm.
make you bleed, it can give you ulcers and so on, over the counter.
Absolutely. And that's something, let's go into a little bit about patient safety. And again, you address this right at the very front of your book. You talk about the Keith Oliver Harris Amendment of 1962. And tell my audience what that was, because that's a lot of years back.
Well, at that time, the Food and Drug rarely put any information didn't put any information to the public and put very little information to the doctors in the product brochures, which it tells us about what the medicine is for, what side effects, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the Keith Oliver Commission insisted that all prescription medicines should not only have the uses of the medicine, but the side effects and the risks. At that time, unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry buried the important information deep in the bowels of the brochure and spent a lot of time on the manufacturing and engineering early on and the usefulness of the drug.
You talk about clinical studies and how important when these studies are done, that they're conducted on anywhere from 20 to 80 subjects. And when you were talking about the very first human clinical studies, you said they were designed to evaluate drug metabolism and mechanism of action in humans, also the side effects of increasing doses. And this first phase is worked with. Then you go into the second phase, which you say involves usually several hundred people, and then phase number three. What are the pluses and minuses of this? How are these monitored and evaluated for efficiency?
Well, there's been a problem along this way. You know, millions of people use a medicine when it's on the market.
Mm-hmm.
If the basis for the decision to put the drug on the market is 200 or 300 people using the drug for 6 months to a year, that really isn't enough evidence. Now, what the group that checks it out doesn't know which of the patients are taking the medicine, which are taking a placebo that looks like the medicine, which of the patients are healthy and taking the medicine, and which people are sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make a report, and a number of professors at universities will write articles about these things because much of that work is done at the universities. And it's on the basis of what the professor said, what the food and drug people said, what the study people said, whether or not food and drug will put it on the market.
You talk also about what's called a fast-track protocol. Tell my audience what that is.
Well, okay. If suddenly there's a very serious disease that we need a new medicine for, it can be fast-tracked. It can be, instead of taking the usual couple or several years to study, they can study it a much shorter period of time and get it to the market. And so while it is helping a lot of people, it may also be hurting a lot of people. And then it needs to be restudied. And we've had a number of medicines just recently recalled that had come onto the market that way.
Now, you talk about how there are so many different drugs that even after information shows that they are very dangerous, that they've been reinstated in the marketplace. How is that possible? I thought that this was something that once you found out that about these toxic levels and what they could do to people, why in the world would they bring them back on the market?
Well, let's talk about how sick a person is. If a person is dying from cancer, and you know it's a very serious cancer, they're sure to die without any treatment, you take any treatment you can to keep them alive a little longer. And unfortunately, many of the treatments are poisonous and dangerous. Radiation, chemicals that can make you vomit, dizzy, sick, anemic, diarrhea. But if it's going to give you a few more months or years of life, you take that risk. And so there are medicines that are very dangerous, but still on the market, because the benefit that, for example, a cancer patient gets from the medicine outweighs the risks that they would take if they were just not using anything.
You bring up a point in your book that I think is especially significant, because you talk about things like aspirin, vitamin D, and iron compounds. If they're used in excessive doses, and I don't know what excessive would be considered relative to this, they can cause toxicity. And excessive use of non-prescription analgesics and anti-inflammatory drugs can cause ulcers, kidney damage, or even create a toxic liver.
Yes.
All of these things that you've mentioned in here, I am very much aware, are factual. And everybody's metabolism, their blood type, how it's going to work with what they take, all of these components have to be evaluated, but are we in a position yet to be able to make that kind of evaluation for a patient?
Yes, a good deal. Let me personalize it. I began to have bleeding a couple of years ago, and I've been studied, and it turns out that I'm not making platelets, which is the substance that the bone marrow makes to clot the blood. So I'm having to take blood additives to keep me from bleeding. Some of the medicines are quite dangerous. As a matter of fact, one was just recalled from the market. And so I go every couple of weeks to take a shot that makes blood for me. If I were taking nothing, I would die from anemia.
Okay. And that is something that is on a very individual basis.
Yes.
Now, are you actually part of a research study with this? Because this is not a common condition, is it?
Well, yes, but I'm on a different research study, which you mentioned, and I'll bring it up. Harvard University, for probably 15 years now, has had a doctor and nurse study done about vitamins. It started out with, I believe, six vitamins. And one by one, they dropped the vitamins out. What they were doing was giving the nurses and the doctors, and I'm one of the doctors, a supply of vitamins without telling them whether they were really vitamins or they were placebos, and then finding out how that patient is doing by interrogating them about their health. Five of the vitamins have been dropped out. We now take only one, and it's still under study. Interestingly enough, the Reader's Digest had a special issue this month saying that almost all vitamin medicines are of no value because you get enough of it from the food, with the exception of vitamin D. Some of your listeners should take a look at that article.
You talk about the controversies on clinical trials because the pharmaceutical industry, to quote from your book, has apparently funded studies and persuaded well-respected scientists to sign on as co-authors of evidence-based papers regarding these studies, even though those scientists did not participate in the investigations. Now, in my mind's view, that is total fraud.
Well, it is, and I'll give you an add-on. A few years ago, the New York Times had a week-long series of articles complaining about the fact that some of the doctors at the Food and Drug Administration, where they test and evaluate these medicines, were getting money from the pharmaceutical industry for, quotes, unrelated lectures. One of the food and drug doctors was actually getting an estimated $300,000 a year for doing lectures and writing articles unrelated to what he was studying. And I wrote articles and letters to the editor. The head of food and drug at that time was in hot water, and he said, well, I'm going to limit them to $50,000 a year. And I wrote an editorial saying $50,000, this was a few years ago, is a lot of money. Most people in this country don't earn $50,000. The food and drug and the people who do the research should get nothing from the pharmaceutical industry.
I agree. I personally am aware of an individual that ran a beautiful, beautiful bed and breakfast facility in the southern area of the United States. And his eyes were opened regarding the pharmaceutical industry and the interaction with physicians in the South, because he found that because he was a gourmet chef, he was doing all kinds of preparation. The pharmaceutical company was wining and dining these physicians because they wanted them to take on a new drug or some particular products that they had. And he said it was amazing to him how much there was in the way, in his terminology, graft. That's what he called it. He said it just stunned him, and he saw it firsthand. And my question to you is, how in the world can this be monitored? I mean, we have so many people that are complaining about this at this time. For every person that's on the Hill in Washington, D.C., there apparently are two lobbyists from the pharmaceutical industry that are there pounding the pavement. As a physician, this has to frustrate you, because most doctors don't have the time to really go into in-depth investigation. They are not chemists, per se. They're physicians, and if they really care about their patients, they're always interested in what might be there. But what would you say to the consumer, and then what would you say to physicians relative to this?
Interesting. When I was a young physician just out of medical school, I went to those lunches and dinners. We even went to a national football game in Los Angeles at the expense of the pharmaceutical industry. I didn't realize or know that I was doing something I shouldn't do, and nor did any of the other doctors. As time went by, it became obvious to me that they were pushing their drugs and not giving us the right information. Now, what finally stopped me entirely from going to these luncheons and dinners and meetings and so on from the pharmaceutical industry was that I discovered that when we went to the luncheons and everybody had a chance to talk, like round table,
mm-hmm.
there were shills in the meeting, doctors who talked as if they used the medicine and it's wonderful and terrific, and everybody should use it, and that aggravated me because the company had bought doctors off. So I stopped going to the meetings. Up until I just recently retired, was accepting some of the medicines that the people bring in from the pharmaceutical companies, and I give them away to my patients as a trial or if they can't afford to buy them. But I it doesn't, you know, all medicines in any group of medicines are very similar. And there's something I call the Me Too formula. If a very successful drug hits the market, all the other pharmaceutical industries are not allowed to repeat it exactly. But if they fuss around the molecule a little bit, they say, me too, mine is even better, which it isn't.
You have a section in your book on ethics, honesty, and medicine. And I'm going to read a chapter, a paragraph out of that chapter. Corporate greed and dishonesty and its effect on the stock market are well known to investors. These practices affect our physical health, which is bad enough, but scientific and medical dishonesty affects our physical well-being. And in your personal view, you say that's intolerable. The American Medical Association, this is one of many groups, and boy, somebody says, well, it's got the stamp of the AMA, this is the way it's supposed to be. However, I've encountered so many people, including medical professionals, that say they are not excited about the AMA. Can you give us a little bit of information on them and what we need to look for? I mean, we're supposed to become more proactive with our own wellness and our medicines, and some people are being given up to 21 medicines a day. It's appalling to me.
Well, you're bringing up an interesting point. I've been a member of the American Medical Association since I was a young doctor, which is almost 50 years. I've also been a member of the American Academy of Family Practice since it started. The AMA was really doing all the things you talked about that aggravated a lot of doctors, and it now has less than half the doctors who are on their rolls. Recently, in the recent times, last year or two, they have moved more towards the center. They're being more critical of the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry. They realize they've lost a lot of membership. And so, and of course, those of us that stayed with them have sent them letters and complained about what was going on. So they are improving, but they're still not perfect. The American Academy of Family Practice was started by family doctors and is much more ethical for that group of doctors.
I know that body chemistry is so important, and I'll relate a personal experience with me. For me, I have to be very careful. If ever I have to take a painkiller, morphine, for example, could be very toxic for my body, and some painkillers just don't even work. I mean, it's just amazing. It might make me high as a kite, but it doesn't touch the pain. The body is such an amazing living machine. It is absolutely incredible. A doctor, you say, must understand body chemistry, because sometimes you can have medicine for a long period of time. Other times you take it for a week, and you're creating some real havoc with the internal organs that can go into very ugly conditions. How do we monitor that? If I, as an individual, had to have some emergency treatment, and how in the world, as lay people, are we going to be able to be proactive with this? And if someone was going to be a caretaker or overseer for us while we're ill, what should we advise those people to be alert to? Because this has happened. I have known of so many people through the years that have experienced toxic reactions, and the average doctor wouldn't listen to them. It's like they couldn't comprehend it. And I'm not saying doctors are bad. I'm just saying, where is it that we can have a common level of understanding and good communication here?
Well, it takes time, and doctors are always busy and in a hurry. I chose to take the time to tell all of my patients the important problems with the medicine and decide whether the risk they were taking was less than the importance of taking the medicine. So they knew all medicines were poison. We find out more about medicine as times go by. I myself was taking a medicine for several years, which we found out later on damaged the kidneys. So it damaged my kidneys. I had to stop taking it. And we find these things out. They've just taken a number of medicines off the market that were standards for doctors to use, and I used them myself. I think the important thing is that Dr. Reed, the part of the product brochure that talks about the side effects and the risks, and makes a decision with each patient. You just have a cold. I don't want to give you a shot of penicillin because I don't want you to get allergic to penicillin. I don't want you to have the side effects. You could break out in a rash and so on because a cold isn't affected by penicillin. And most of my patients are willing to accept that. Mm-hmm. I might give them a little decongestant to relieve them. I had one woman walk out of my office with her young son because I said that. Your boy just has a cold. I don't want to give him a shot of penicillin. She walked out, went down the street, and got a shot of penicillin. Mm-hmm. But I felt good about what I did. And, you know, with the fact that I talked to patients, I took time, I knew them, I made a nice living. And many of my patients, now that I'm retired, it's hard to believe. They call me. They ask me to go out to lunch with them, and so on. It's a wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. But that is where, as a family physician, you made a point of talking to people. And one of the biggest complaints that I hear from most individuals is that the doctors rush them through. They aren't open to conversation. It's like, well, tell me where you're hurt. I'll give you an aspirin, or come back on Thursday. You know, it's almost gotten to be an assembly line process where nobody takes the time to really communicate. And sometimes there's very strong emotional issues behind situations. Other times it can be a major physical trauma. I mean, the variances are just infinite. Now, you bring up something in your book that I think is very important, and that is expiration, interaction, and duration of medicines. And there are some, no problems. There are others, and it's the majority of them, there actually is a chemistry change that occurs. But something that we're coming up with now is that if people flush pills down the toilet, flush hormone stuff down the toilet, that's going into our water table, and we're now discovering a lot of people are getting medicine that don't need it.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I've known that for a number of years. I thought I could actually taste the medicines. I drink only distilled water. I won't drink tap water because tap water has chemicals in it, and they're dangerous. And in time, will have an effect on you if you drink it long enough and often enough. Distilled water is a little more expensive, but I would urge people to drink it because, as you know, the water that's distilled is actually made from the vapor of boiling water. Mm-hmm. And doesn't take the chemicals with it.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. Now, you also cover in your book, you say you could fill volumes with stories about patients who reported symptoms they were not aware were being caused by the medicine they were taking. Why do you think it is so difficult for physicians to examine this from this perspective? I mean, I've known of people that are going to one specialist here, another specialist there, and they're really not communicating doctor to doctor about what's going on, what is the patient telling them, what kind of medicines are they on, what kind of food is this person taking in. You know, all of these things come into play because it's all chemistry.
Well, I agree with you. And the family physician should really be the one that evaluates everything, knows where the patient is going, knows what medicines they take, and discusses the issues with the specialists. I take a lot of medicines, and each specialist has no idea what the other medicines are doing. It's my family physician who says, well, you're taking this, you're taking that, you take the other things, we better do some tests, check your kidneys and liver and your and so on to be sure you're not having any bad effects, which of course I do have. But you know, the risks of the illness outweigh the risks of the medicine.
Now, doctor, we're going to have to take a break. Would you stay with me for another 15 minutes?
Sure.
All right. We have Dr. Kirschner. His wonderful book is called All Medicines Are Poison. And we're going to be talking about some of the other aspects of his book. His book is highly informative. Stay with me because I think you're going to find some of the information we're going to be sharing quite fascinating. So don't go away. This is Donna Sebo. Again, my guest, Dr. Melvin Kirschner. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
My guest today is Dr. Melvin Kirschner. His book is All Medicines Are Poison, Making Your Way Through the Medical Minefield. I'm a strong believer in trying to educate yourself as much as possible. You may not go to medical school, but you need to have an informed level so that you can be more effective in your decision making and pay attention to what you need to do for yourself so that if something is not right, you're going to question. So in educating yourself, it's important, and that's what Dr. Kirschner's book does. You talk about so many things in your book, so we're going to have time here to touch on a few of them. Sanitation. It has been appalling to me that in our hospitals and in so many areas of medicine, people have gotten away from the simple patterning of washing hands. Soap and water does amazing things. And quarantining people that are sick from the healthy people does amazing things. It's good for the patient, and it's good for those that don't need to be sick. Why is it that we have gone from a period, a time where, like after World War II up to about, I think it was, what, 70s? That this was something that was pretty consistent in schools and everywhere else. I mean, this was mandatory. But now, today, they've gotten so sloppy. I mean, we've got hospitals here in the Pacific Northwest that had to be closed down because of the filth. and the disease that was happening and the infections, staph infections, all kinds of things, through air systems being transmitted. What's gone wrong here?
Well, actually, we've done a great deal in recent times. We have dispensers at the doorway of each hospital bed, and the nurse and the doctor and everybody is supposed to wash their hands and use the dispenser, which is a germicide, before going in and after coming out. But what's happened is hospitals have gotten so busy in recent years that they rush around and, you know, somebody calls an emergency, everybody rushes into the room, then they don't have time to wash their hands. It may take 1 minute before that patient dies. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what happens in hospitals. So there's always going to be a problem, but thank goodness the hospitals are now deciding that you must wash your hands, you must wear gloves, the little plastic gloves.
Right.
You must use the detergent disinfectant coming in and out of the room, and masks and hats if necessary. You can't, when an emergency occurs, you kind of rush in to save the patient's life, and there just isn't time to do that. I'm interested in one variation. The cruise ships are now all suffering from diarrhea disease. And what the cruise ships have done is they've stopped letting people feed themselves or serve themselves. They've have people going around wiping down all the banisters. When you come into the dining room, they give you a wash paper with mm-hmm. germicidal on it. You may have done that, so you know. And even with all of that, there was a report of an outbreak very recently in the newspapers.
Now, you talk in your book about people, how they can be carriers of something, sort of like Typhoid Mary.
Yeah.
And you talk about a general practitioner who had no idea that he was infected with Staphylococcus, and it had colonized inside of him, so everyone he went to, it was passing right to them. And it wasn't bothering him at all, but he, like a Typhoid Mary, was carrying it, and he was stunned to find out that he was the reason that all of these people were getting sick. So he stopped doing surgery and being around babies and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's amazing how this can occur. Let's talk about chelation for a moment, because I know my engineer, Don, had said, wow, I want to hear about this too, because there's a member of my family who's affected with. And I was talking to you off air because I was fascinated with your section on, I know my husband had a chelation treatment. And we was told by a friend who's a pharmacologist, he said, whatever you do, don't let this go on for a long period of time, because it does a certain process and it's very good at it, but after that it'll start leaching stuff out of your bones. And it was just quite a revelation to my husband. It explained why, because the back of his hand was used, why he was having problems with certain knuckles. And fortunately he had stopped it, you know, without taking it for a real long time. But tell us about how you met the doctor that originally started this, and it's good for what?
It's good for heavy metal poisoning. The doctor I met was the doctor that first discovered chelation. He tells the story. He was an old doctor when I was a young doctor, so this started before I was a doctor. He was in the laboratory one night when the doctor from the emergency room said, we have a youngster here who is having heavy metal poisoning. Is there anything you can send down to do something about it? So he calculated the weight of the child and used a chelating agent, sent it down. They gave the child the chelating agent, and sure enough, he recovered from the heavy metal poisoning. Since then, It's been standard for heavy metal poisoning and certain other things. Unfortunately, the alternative medicine industry doctors have taken it to cure everything, which it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically heavy metal poisoning, which can be common, you know.
Mm-hmm. In today's world, yes, very common,
yes.
Much more so than we recognize.
Right.
Yeah, it's something that people just have no idea about. In fact, it's fascinating how you can get arsenic. There's certain areas of the country that arsenic is naturally present in the water.
Yes.
And unless you know that, you're taking in all of this toxicity. You don't even know. You can't taste it in the water.
No.
And when you're doing it, once it's found out, then you've got to go through a regimen of detoxifying
right.
the body because of that. You've got so many wonderful points of information, Doctor. You talk about the program that backfired, the 1992 Prescription Drug User Fee Act. You've got so many very, very good points. Now, do you have a website that people can go to?
It's very easy to remember. It's www.allmedicinesarepoison.com. And the All Medicines Are Poison have no spaces or no capitals. AllMedicinesarePoison.com.
Well, Doctor, I just am so appreciative of your taking time out of your very, very busy life. And I appreciate the fact that you've written this book because I think it is invaluable knowledge. I think it is knowledge that we as lay people need to understand. And coming from someone that has lived in the medical world for the many years that you have, I'm very appreciative of the fact that you've had the courage and the presence to be able to put this down in black and white, because it is something I think we do need to know about. Thank you, Dr. Kirshner. Dr. Kirshner's website is allmedicinesarepoison.com. Remember, being informed allows you to become educated. You also need to ask questions, because that is what is going to empower you as a consumer to understand more about how to be proactive with your own health. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Again, my thanks to Dr. Kirshner. All Medicines Are Poison. Get the book. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. To me, it's such a joy to be able to have professionals like Dr. Kirshner on the air with me, because I think that it really empowers us as people. And I feel so fortunate, number one, that I'm able to have the opportunity to read the material, and two, to be able to share it with you. So I encourage you, because every month I've got just a tremendous array of people, and I encourage you to check out the listings of the guests that are going to be upcoming. Now, I do want you to know about next week, we're going to be having a wonderful lineup of people. We're going to be having Dr. Amy Lancer. She's going to be talking about building bone vitality. There have been so many myths out there, and so many people are paranoid, especially women, about losing bone density. Of course, we're hammered with this all of the time. And so frequently, there really is a very simple resolution and solution. So we're going to be talking about that on Monday. Then, if you're interested in mortgages, if you would like to know how to deal with various aspects of financing regarding your home, we're going to be talking with Kent Anderson. And it's Notes 101. And the reason it's called that is that this is his job. He trains people so that they can know how to work differently with financial planning and in helping people with their homes. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to be talking about Hollywood next Wednesday. Stumbling to the Stars, Jean Kolish is going to be my guest. She is a hoot. I'm telling you, this woman is so much fun. She's done caricatures of movie stars. But we're also going to have another special guest, and that's Teresa Tapp. And for those of you who are regular listeners, every time Teresa is on the air, we have something new that we learn about keeping fit and looking fabulous. And hey, guys, you can look fabulous, too. There's no reason for you to have to go out and break your neck trying to look good. Teresa's system works. I've been doing it for 2 years. And I swear by it. And when I don't do it, I feel like I've missed something. So we're going to be talking about that. Excuse me, I said Thursday, it's on Wednesday. And then we're going to be talking with Lynn Klippel, Overcomers, Inc., True Stories. I loved this book. Why? It's about people that have overcome adversity in a way and manner you never would have expected. And then we're going to be talking about Alphatudes, the Alphabet of Gratitude. Michelle Waldner is going to be my guest. So we have so much to offer you in the Donna Sebo Show. And I do hope you'll tell your friends and you will join me during the week, because there may be something special that you could pass along to someone else. And I really think we've got so many wonderfully, wonderfully talented people on this planet. And it's a joy to be able to bring them to the airwaves through BBS Radio. Speaking of that, I want you to know, and I believe in this strongly, one person can make a big difference. You never know how you are going to make a difference in someone's life, and it can take you around the world. I have a friend, I don't get to see her very often, but her name is Gemma Bullis. Gemma is an incredible woman. She started a program regarding clean water 4 years ago, and what she has accomplished is just absolutely amazing. It's her site is a single drop, and it is absolutely amazing. Go check out her website, because she is dealing with people all over the world that are living in conditions that are absolutely amazing. And do you know what they're doing? They're teaching the women. The men aren't particularly interested, because the cultural aspects have an attitude, you don't do this with the women. Well, it's the women who are the caretakers, and so it's the women who are saying, you teach me, I will do it so my family can be healthier. She has now got an inaugural office in the Philippines. She travels around the world, and she said they are working in the poorest region of the Philippines to meet the needs of thousands of evacuees that are fleeing conflict areas. There are hideous, hideous wars going on. It's absolutely appalling what human beings do to other human beings. But she's out there with some volunteers and people that are saying, let's move forward. We're weary of this. We want to have a better life. And they hold a sperm on a woman water stewards program, and they have aligned with some other organizations. They're doing all kinds of work in Mozambique. They are in other areas of Africa. They are also working with a U.S. program, Gray Water Action. They've got a gray water installers training so they can help people overseas. So there's so much here. If you can, just go right into a single drop, and you will find that there is so much information there. One woman started this, and she didn't even know how she was going to make it. And she's gone around the world. She is a professional musician. She is an extremely talented, beautiful human being. And I'm always thrilled just to sit and listen to her story. So I just got her newsletter. They have a regular newsletter out. They have assisted over 45,000 evacuees that because of the efforts of her organization, they have some sanitation and they have clean water. And just as we were talking with the doctor earlier, sanitation is so important. And this is something that most people around the world don't have. Donna Sebo here. I know that we are out of time. Not quite. We've got about 5 minutes here. But if you should want to give me a call, here's the toll-free number you can call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some time, some information with you. I am absolutely amazed at how people can be so resourceful. And when people have an opportunity to think through or try to figure out a better, what do you want to say, a better whatever, mousetrap, to make our world a better place, the innovation that can come forward is amazing. Solar panels. How many of us would like to have something like solar panels on our houses or around our businesses? We'd like to conserve energy. We really want to be more efficient, and better yet, we'd not have to worry about paying our utility bills. In fact, the utility companies would pay us for whatever energy we would be able to give to the grid. Well, it's so expensive. The average individual isn't going to be able to spend $45,000 to $100,000 for solar plant panels. Well, there's all these people out there in the world that are saying, we've got to have a better way, we've got to have a better way. Well, I'll tell you what. New engineers are racing to make a consumer-friendly version of solar panels. Mm-hmm. There's one candidate, and it's called Solar Inc. Have you heard of it? I hadn't until I came across this article. It's applied with a spray gun, and the ink allows builders and homeowners to turn windows, doors, and roofs into power-generating panels. You would just spray it on the way you would on a model airplane. Now, Brian Korgel, who is with the University of Texas at Austin Chemical Engineering, he's a professor of that department, he invented this technology. And he said the ink can also be printed on plastic sheets using an inkjet type of printer. And he expects that he's going to be out with this in 3 to 5 years. Well, there's a lot of questions I have relative to that, is how well is it going to stand up to dirt, wind, and pine needles and the chemicals that come off of them. And that's because I live in the Pacific Northwest. But ideas are there. Let's take our caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. I'm JL, and I'm from New York.
Where are you in New York? New York City?
Brooklyn, New York.
You're in Brooklyn. I've never been in Brooklyn. I've been in New York City, but I haven't gotten down or go. I guess it depends on which way you're going, down or up to Brooklyn. But that's fine. One day I'll be able to make it there. All right.
Great.
I'd like to say, JL, when I'm watching you in my mind, it's as if I am in a conflict. I feel like I'm turning left, then I'm turning right, and I'm turning left, and I'm turning right, and it's like, oh, fiddle-dee-dee, I can't seem to make up my mind. I'm getting facts and information that are coming from different points, and I see that it's valid, but I don't know which one is the absolute, which one I should just totally focus on. And I would say, why not combine them? In other words, take the best out of both aspects and see how you can bring them into a modality that is comfortable for you as an individual. Do that, and you're going to be way ahead of the game. You've got a lot going on here. You've got a lot of responsibilities facing you. So you need to know that you can take portions of what you feel is valuable. And you don't have to make an absolute left or right decision. And you can put together what's going to work and create, for all intents and purposes, a whole new direction for yourself. And you'll be the one that will make the choice. And you're not going to have to go by other people's dictums. It's a different type of thinking, but but it's going to serve you well. So be patient, think things through, use what you need to use, and let go of the rest. What question would you like to ask me, JL?
Well, I think I have some interviews coming up, and I just want to know if I'm going to do well.
Oh, I think you're going to do very well. What I'd like for you to do when you go into the interviews is feel like you're going in for an adventure. And really, when you're there, don't hesitate to ask the company about, or the people representing the company, what's their mission statement? How do they see the company 5 years from now? What is going to be the educational opportunities for you while you're working with the company, should that opportunity present itself? Be excited. Be excited about yourself and what you have to offer. And I know there are in some areas that you don't have a lot of experience, but that doesn't mean you are not capable of learning and doing on a whole different level. So just enjoy the interviews. I honestly want you to walk into those interviews and just say, I am going to enjoy this interview. I'm going to make it all right. I'm not going to focus on, gee, whether they're going to hire me or not. I'm going to enjoy myself. I really am, and I'm going to want to find out as much about the company as I possibly can.
Okay.
And you'll find your whole positioning of observation with the company will be quite different.
Mm-hmm. So you do see that I'll do well during the interview?
Oh, I think so. I think you'll do very well. Just relax. You already know what you know. Relax. Be yourself.
Okay.
But don't be afraid to question either.
Okay.
All right, my dear. I've got to go. We're out of time.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm delighted you were able to call in. This is Donna Sebo. My gracious, time does go by so quickly. I'm so grateful again to Dr. Kirshner for being with us today, and I'm grateful for you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have an utterly magnificent weekend. We'll be back here bright and sassy on Monday. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.